This is conversational.
Yeah.
The claw went to your, went right to your head.
I've had like three sips of this. I'm not a big fan of seltzer water.
Well, fucking give it back.
It doesn't taste like alcohol. That's the only thing, at all.
It stinks up on you.
Yeah.
But
for posterity, what should I say about this game?
I don't know. What should you say?
This week on It's So Bad, we're talking about a game where your sanity matters as we continue to explore the horror genre of video games. This week it's Eternal Darkness on It's So Bad. And welcome, Matt, Chris, to an episode of the podcast.
Hi.
How are you guys doing?
Good enough.
So enthusiastic this evening.
Good enough.
So we're recording on an evening where we're going to be talking about multiple horror, evil, disturbed games. Like Eternal Darkness. For the GameCube, which came out in June 2002, the psychological horror game. It is not a survival horror game. This game is not Resident Evil, just to put it out there.
Unfortunately
not. Matt is a big fan of Resident Evil. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. We're going to be adding this week Eternal Darkness to our endless list. And our endless list is a list of games where we're continuously adding new games to it. Every week we do it. Last week we added Phantasmagoria to the list, and this week we'll be adding Eternal Darkness. The list is comprised of all different games, good, bad, or otherwise. We talk about games in terms of their gameplay, their story, how they influence the industry, their legacy, how good they are if they hold up, many different factors, and we include those in our rankings of our endless list, which you can find on our Medium page, which is included in a link in the podcast description. And yes, what is this game? What is Eternal Darkness, Matt?
All right, so it's a pretty unique game. I'd start with that. I think so, at least. It's, what would you say? It's kind of, it's horror game, but it's, it leans heavily on storytelling. You know, things are broken up into finite chapters.
Which are confusing as fuck.
Right. there's time travel, not time travel, but like the story doesn't take place chronologically.
Right.
Or the gameplay doesn't take place chronologically.
I would say the story is told chronologically, but it's out of time. So it's out of sequence of time.
Of course, yes.
So
that's what I meant to say.
You are told a story in a chronological order, but you're going to different periods in history. So you're going to a couple different settings. We have the setting of the Persia, the Forbidden City, Khmer Temple in Cambodia, the Oubli Cathedral in Amiens, France. You've got the Roivas family estate in Providence, Rhode Island. Yes, a New England feature.
Yes.
And then the underground city, which is underneath the mansion.
Also in Rhode Island.
Sort of. Maybe. But yes, you're going through all of the different settings, but you're also going through different time periods. So you start off the game in the Roivas family estate in the year 2000, and then you go to the Roman imperial soldiers who are visiting Persia.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
Centurions? Is that what
Centurions. Are visiting Persia to...
Pius.
Yes, he's visiting Persia.
Is that real? Did that happen?
So, this will bring in a good point. So, this game came out in June of 2002. There were some major changes that happened because of 9/11 to the story. Most notably, one of the settings, Persia, was changed from, I think it was supposed to be like Israel or Jerusalem, and one of the main characters was supposed to be a crusader. So they got rid of that whole storyline because of 9/11. And so when they say Persia, they're probably meaning in when they were originally developing this, like Jerusalem area, right, or like Israel or like the Holy Lands.
Okay.
But because of 9/11 and they wanted to be sensitive to people hating on Arabics,
okay,
at that time, Arab people. So
yeah,
that's they changed
Terrorists
it.
Terrorists win again. You know?
I don't know about that.
Racists win again?
I don't know. I don't think in today, if you did that, you'd get called out as an SJW.
Yes, censorship.
Yes, but back then you could do that and people wouldn't care about it because they were like, yes, maybe we should be sensitive to people who are needlessly attacked
right,
for know. This thing. But now we just don't give a fuck
because
people
if
suck.
It was even published. Like, how much you could have even known about that in 2002?
I bet... Knowing the way like other censorship was probably handled back then, I bet it was like a blurb in the magazine.
Yeah,
or,
yeah, 100%. But I will say, so this game came out in 2002. It was demoed at the Tokyo Game Show in 1999, where they featured a section where you played as a crusader.
Hmm.
So when it came out, people were like, "Where's this section?" But the only people who would say that would be reviewers or people in the media. So
the media.
Now, as one who has not played this game and does not know much about this game, was the section completely removed, or was it like retrofitted and kind of given like a new skin to reflect the new setting?
No, so they just got rid of all references to the area and they just changed it to Persia, like nothing else.
Okay.
So
for a little bit of context, the game opens with you as Alex.
Yes, Alexandra.
Alexandra Roivas.
Yes.
And so you find out your uncle or grandfather?
Your grandfather.
Gets decapitated?
Was decapitated.
in his own library.
Yes.
And you find out about that?
From the police.
From, yeah, a cool detective character that I wish was in the game.
Yeah, he's gone after the first 5 minutes.
And then you it's on you to investigate the murder, and you find a book.
The Tome of Eternal Darkness.
The Tome of Eternal Darkness, and then you find pages throughout the mansion.
Okay.
And the pages transport you back in time.
Right. They're like
to
chapters.
All these different things. Yes, they're and they it's the presentation in that regard when you open up the book or when you open up a new story.
Yeah.
Is pretty good.
I agree.
But overall the story is super fucking complex and confusing.
Yeah.
I would say so first off, this is our first GameCube game that we're adding to the list.
Huh. Is it really?
Okay. Yes. First GameCube exclusive game.
Okay.
So we added Spider-Man
right,
2,
right.
Wasn't an exclusive.
Yeah.
Just so we're clear, this game was developed by the Silicon Knights and published by Nintendo. It is actually Nintendo's first ever M-rated game that they published.
It's definitely a weird Nintendo game.
Yes, it's super weird.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the relationship was with Silicon Knights and Nintendo, but in Silicon Knights, I believe, was a U.S. developer.
Yeah.
And the main director of it was Dennis Dyack, and he was kind of the guy who led it. And he would go on. He did also Bite and Kaidos and Geist for the GameCube.
Did he have anything to do with another game on this list? Did he have anything to do with Trespasser?
He did not.
Okay,
all
right.
I
think that's a fair question. Should be asked about every game that we talk about.
Does this person have anything to do with Trespasser?
Do they have that stink on them?
So he did not, but he would go on to make Too Human.
Is that Detroit Too Human?
No, it was a game that was like really hyped for the PS3 and Xbox 360, I believe.
Just like Detroit Too Human?
Is that what it's called? Detroit
Too Human? No, Detroit Become Human.
Become
Human.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So Too Human was more in this vein, I think, than those other games. But yeah, he would also, Silicon Knights would also make Metal Gear Solid, The Twin Snakes.
Oh, okay.
Directly after this game.
Cool.
So they're the same company. But yeah, some perspective games that were released in 2002 that are notable, that are kind of comparative to Eternal Darkness, Fatal Frame. Have you guys heard of Fatal Frame?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you take pictures.
Yeah.
Right? It's a Japanese, like, spooky game.
Yes. Resident Evil Remake for the GameCube came out.
Also a Japanese spooky game.
Yeah, two months before this. Smash Bros. Melee came out in May.
Mm.
Elder Scrolls 3 Morrowind came out in June. Red Faction 2 came out in October. GTA Vice City came out in October. And Resident Evil 0 came out in November, along with Metroid Prime. So
Damn.
Kind of
A lot of good GameCube games.
GameCube was kind of swinging the fences there around that time, because Resident Evil Zero was a GameCube exclusive that time, right?
They were, and they did not do well because the PS2 had a DVD drive at the end of the day, and a lot of people just bought the PS2 for the DVD drive. Unfortunately,
that was my DVD player.
It was my DVD player too. It was cheap. It was the cheapest one on the market.
Yeah, like my PlayStation is my Blu-ray player.
I worked at Circuit City at the time when the PS2 came out. So, and it was the cheapest DVD player you could get. It was one of the cheapest. Yeah. And then you could also play PS2 games on it. Because all DVD players are around like $200 for like a decent one.
Yeah, right.
My PS2 is actually modded to play region-free DVDs and to play import games as well.
Oh, boy.
I did it myself. I was very proud of myself.
I tried to do that with my PS1, but I never did it on my PS2.
Mm. Is that like a hardware modification?
You have to open it up. You have to like...
Is it like a soldering iron involved?
I don't remember. God, I did it so long ago, but like my PS2 like is like a top loader now.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Cool. Yeah.
Weird.
I don't think I have solder
anything. It's not a slim line, is it? It's a regular fat one?
It's the regular one. Yeah, the regular fat one. Yeah.
Top. Weird.
Now, did you guys play this game when it first came out?
No, so I didn't even really know what it was until I started getting back into retro games, and about like 2 years ago I bought it on like a whim because I wanted to play it, because I heard some things about the sanity effects which are a big thing in this game, when because there's like three important things with the gameplay to remember. There's are three important stats that you have health, you have magic, and you have sanity. And the thing about the sanity effect is it does weird things to the screen and to your character, which we'll get into in a little bit. So I picked up the game for that reason. And the game is expensive for a retro game. It's about $40 to $50 right now on eBay. So I picked it up like 2 or 3 years ago. But I never played it because I wanted to play with a friend, and we just never found time to play it. Or I think we tried to play it, and we got lost really quickly and didn't know what to do, which is weird.
I can see that.
Yeah, I guess. You kind of have to sit down and figure it out. It's kind of puzzly.
There's some critical thinking involved.
A little bit. What's your history with it, Matt?
I didn't have a GameCube in 2002, but I remember in like EB or whatever it was, seeing, you know, like posters of it or whatever, and I remember reading in magazines that it was well-rated. But, I found it intriguing. I knew that there was something about changing who you controlled.
Yeah.
Like, you don't play the same character throughout the whole game.
Right.
And I knew that intrigued me as a 13-year-old.
It is known as a cult hit. It's like a cult classic these days. So it's got low print numbers. I think it actually only sold 500,000 copies, which is relatively low. It only sold 20,000 copies in Japan, which is, like, incredibly low. Mm.
Especially, I guess, for a Nintendo published game, you would imagine... Yeah.
So it didn't do well. But I didn't know about it until I really got into the scene. Did you ever hear about Eternal Darkness?
So that's what I was kind of going to get to, is that, like, I have always heard the title.
Yeah.
And I actually feel like the cover art, I feel like, is something that I've seen about 2 times, but I feel like the cover art doesn't really
convey
what the game is. So I guess my next question was going to be, like, what is this game? Who is, like, this game for?
It's for people who wanted a different experience from Resident Evil.
Yeah.
And I think the cover art conveys and kind of why I don't think it sold well, because the concept of what is the driving force behind the story is very Lovecraftian and Cthulhu-esque. So that whole nebulous, vague conception of what evil could be is very hard to sell.
Is that also the New England ties?
Exactly.
Cthulhu and the Lovecraftian? 100%.
So Lovecraft is from Rhode Island, for people who don't know.
And there's a Poe quote when you start the game.
Yeah, and it's very much also Poe-inspired as well.
100%.
And the director, Dennis Dyack, has been on record as saying it's Cthulhu-esque, and Poe was definitely an influence. So.
Not to get sidetracked, but do you know what part of Massachusetts in particular Lovecraft said was like the most haunted or most mythically connected part of Massachusetts?
No.
Air, where air is.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. Because, I mean,
Air, Massachusetts.
Have you ever been there? It feels like the end of the world.
Really? So we just played, for last week, we talked about Phantasmagoria, which was also an Edgar Allan Poe-inspired
game.
So we're doing a lot of
weird horror. And,
weird psychological. This game is definitely
weird
more
fiction,
in the psychological horror as opposed to Resident Evil, which is more survival horror.
Yeah.
There's no tension
no survival at all.
Yeah, around your survival. You have a sword and you can hack up zombies and other creatures and you can take off their limbs. It doesn't feel like they pose very much of a threat most of the time.
In general, the combat's pretty bad in this game.
Yeah, and so the way the combat works is you have a sword. Sometimes you get a gun, but you don't. When you have a gun, you don't even use it for the most part.
Right.
The sword, you can hack off limbs and heads and take down zombies.
Yeah, so if you pull down, ZR? Like one of the trigger buttons, you can like lock on to different body parts and like aim for the head and kind of decapitate people.
It's just L and R, and then there's a Z button. Right. So it's just one of those buttons.
But the combat... When you compare it to Resident Evil, you know, Resident Evil has generally limited ammo or limited resources.
Which you feel is a tension. That's what part of the horror is. You don't know if you're going
to
survive.
I think it's integral to the Resident Evil experience. And then this, you've got melee weapons, so there's no ammo. But the enemies or the monsters, they seem to go down pretty easily if you just swing for their head. And oftentimes what will happen is you get into a scenario where you get like stun locked by, you know, you'll get hit or ganged up on by two or three guys, and then they'll just hit you, and as your health drops, you can't run away.
Right.
And so
you get slower too.
Yeah, and you get you get slower. Point. And so every time I died in this game, it was like I knew I was going to die well before it happened because my health was too low. I couldn't get away from the guys that were coming at me, and really it wasn't. I mean, maybe I got myself into that situation, but it didn't feel like I made a mistake to die.
Yeah, and you get really quickly in this game, once you get like 3 or 4 hours into the game, you have the spells where you can heal yourself. And once you get those and you get attack spells that kind of clear rooms, but I never really use those. Once you can heal yourself, there's the tension of you dying kind of goes away as well.
Totally. And so did you know that there's a point in the game where you have to pick like a path.
Yeah, at the very beginning.
Right.
When you're pious.
And so
I think it might be when you're Kareem.
Yeah, it's early. One of those chapters. Yeah. And so, you said earlier that there's like a health meter, a sanity meter, and a mana meter.
Yeah.
And they're all correspond to a color.
Yeah, a green, blue, and red.
Right. And so when you cast these spells, you can cast them with one of those colors, basically.
Right.
And so you can cast heal, you cast red heal, it heals you for your health, blue for mana, and so on. But depending on which path you choose dictates when you get certain symbols to apply to your spell.
Oh, I did not know that.
So I think if you pick like the green symbol at the beginning, you don't get the health or like healing of your health until the 5th chapter. Whereas if you pick the blue one, you get the health healing in the 3rd chapter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it can really...
I think I picked the green section anyways, too.
Okay, yeah.
What color did you pick?
Green,
Do you remember? I didn't even know that was important at the time because they don't talk about it.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Really. Yeah. But yeah, so there's... And those all those items correspond to ancients.
Right.
So there's these amulets and there's these ancients... that are like these Cthulhu-esque monsters that are in the background.
And they're like fighting in space?
Yeah, they're fighting in space, except for Mantarok, who's a physical being.
Is he the purple one?
No, he's the guy in the basement that he's very... When I first saw him,
very
I was...
Very Lovecraftian.
Yeah, I was like, this is actually kind of menacing.
Yeah.
And then you just walk by him, and he doesn't do anything.
And lots of tentacles?
And yes, and eyes.
Lovecraftian
eyes and mouths, yes.
And so. Doesn't he eat... The Cambodian girl, isn't that like
Elia.
How she?
Yeah, yes.
It's like the 3rd chapter or whatever.
But that's
the only chapter or character.
No, Pius kills him because she is the embodiment. She gets the embodiment of Mantarok.
Of course,
my dear Alex, I will always be at your side.
So there are these ancients. There are, I believe, 4 ancients.
Right.
And they're all fighting for superiority. And Pius gets the whole reason behind the story is Pius gets lured in by one ancient who wants to dominate the other ancients.
And it's the ancient you choose, right?
Yes.
The color you choose, yeah, like corresponding to the color.
And then there's Mantarok, who is, and this is where it, like, this whole thing is fucking confusing as hell, is Mantarok is the ancient of chaos.
Okay.
And that's also why when you're watching and playing this game, it happens chronologically. Like, what's happening with Pius and him he's gathering up amulets in order to help his ancient to take over the galaxy. And we're doing a really piss poor job explaining this, but it's just really confusing.
Yeah.
The reason why it happens out of order and out of time is because Mantarok is controlling space and time.
That makes sense, because every time... So when you play as these different characters, there's a sequence that'll happen in the middle of the chapter where you'll get teleported to this weird bridge.
Yes.
With screaming faces on the floor.
That's the coolest that was part of the game.
A very neat effect.
Yes.
And it was a bummer when I realized it was just the same thing each chapter.
I think it happens 9 times or something like right. that.
But yeah, the statues are built as you beat the chapters. Yeah. And okay. So it is really happening chronologically. Makes sense
yes.
now.
Yes.
I've achieved clarity.
So Kareem finds an artifact in the Forbidden City, hides it away from Pius. He then entrusts Roberto Bianchi, who's a Venetian architect, who then gives it to Michael Edwards, a Canadian firefighter, who instructs him to give the artifact to Alexandra in Rhode Island in 2000.
It's funny that, what's the firefighter's name?
Michael Edwards. He's a Canadian firefighter.
Isn't he like a Gulf War soldier, though? Doesn't it take place during the Gulf War?
He is not. Yes, but he's a firefighter putting out an oil fire.
Post-Gulf War.
That's happening above the Forbidden City.
Right.
In Persia, not Iraq. But
okay. I thought they like specifically refer to the Gulf War.
They do. Maybe. They do, but
it's
they
just
call
strange
Persia.
That they... Did I would think that if they're afraid of 2000, you know, post 9/11 things, that they wouldn't even go near
this game. Okay, this game came out in between 9/11 and the Iraq War.
Okay,
so just keep that in mind.
Context.
I also like there's a point in this game where you're, where Pius says, we've got to find an era where there's a lot of destruction and chaos happening, and like. Instead of picking World War II, which was like the carnage, he chooses Desert Storm.
Yeah.
And he goes, that's why Michael Edwards has to get the ambulance.
Well, Desert Storm puts you in
Persia,
you know, the Middle East,
yes,
right?
Yes, right. So that's the one location, which is the Forbidden City. In the other location, France, Pius moves an artifact, the stronger ancient artifact, the artifact that represents the stronger ancient, to Amiens, France. Pius orders the assassination of Charlemagne.
Ah, right.
Anthony, who is a young monk, can't stop it, ends up dying to a a big black guardian.
Well, he doesn't die immediately, right? Because he shows up later as like a zombie.
Yeah, no, he turns into a zombie because he gets poisoned. Then a Franciscan monk named Paul Luther, who's visiting the church, is accused of a murder by the Inquisition. He's killed by the black guardian, just ripped in two. And then you go back as a World War II field reporter when it's a hospital.
It's World War One?
Oh, World War One. Yeah. The guy's name is Peter Jacob. He then defeats the Black Guardian while investigating why patients are disappearing from the church.
Yep.
And finds the artifact. He gives it to Edward Roivas like years later. Why everybody are giving amulets to Roivas doesn't really make any sense to the Roivas family.
Yeah, I mean, is he like a scholar or something?
I don't really get it. And Michael Edwards' motivation for giving it to them is not really clear either. In Cambodia, another ancient named Mantarok, who we talked about, opposes Pius. He entrusts his essence to Elia, who is...
the Cambodian
girl.
Yeah.
Who then gives it to the Indiana Jones ripoff, Dr. Edwin Lindsay.
Right, yes.
And he entrusts it to Edward Roivas. So all of the amulets go to Roivas, the grandfather Roivas, except for one which goes to Alexandra. She gets all the power. And then back in Rhode Island, the great-great-great-grandfather of Alexandra, the colonial, finds this ancient city underneath the mansion.
Yep.
Where the ancients gather, I guess. Or so, where there's a circle of power. I don't know why that ancient city exists underneath the mansion.
Right, so maybe that's why... maybe there's some supernatural force bringing all the...
Yes.
Our
This is like the worst podcast.
This is fun because I've never played this game. Like I didn't play it going into this podcast. I've just never played it. I was trying to figure out by listening to you guys talk about it, like, is this something I'd be interested in playing? And all I've kind of got from this is the shittiest choose your own adventure book.
Oh, you don't I've get ever to choose.
You don't get to choose.
I know, but this is like what it feels like with like how this is, scattered this is.
This is honestly this what I just said is the most clearest explanation of what the story is.
Yeah, I understand it more now.
But it makes no sense.
Right.
Okay. So this was a game that, from what I understand, was, and actually what I recall as well, was met with almost universal critical acclaim.
I don't really understand why.
Yeah, it got 92 on Metacritic. At the time, Metacritic was a thing in 2002.
I'll drop some quick numbers on you. IGN, 9.6 out of 10. GameSpot, 9.4 out of 10. Game Informer, 9.5 out of 10.
I don't get it.
Famitsu, 32 out of 40, which I feel like is low for Famitsu because I feel like they just kind of throw out the borderline 40s to everything. Eurogamer was 9 out of 10.
So the big thing about this game and why it's different is, and we haven't gotten there yet. And because
let's get there now.
Yeah. I mean, it has a sanity meter, right? Yeah. And if your sanity meter gets low, then crazy shit starts happening.
Yeah, I would say cool shit happens.
Here's what happens. And I'm not going to read them all, but there's like 24 things that can happen. So if your sanity meter gets low, you can turn into a zombie and die.
Uh-huh.
But it's not really happening. You'll just wake up.
There's a couple things where, like, you'll go into a new room, the sanity effect will happen.
Right.
You don't know it.
Right.
And like, then all of a sudden...
Your character may shrink or grow when entering a room. Your character might shoot at nothing and then shoot at the camera.
I didn't have that one.
When reloading a gun...
That sounds kind of unsettling.
When you reload your gun, you shoot yourself in the stomach, resulting in a fake death.
I didn't get that one.
I didn't get that one either. Yeah. Your character's head might fall off and recite Hamlet.
Okay, yeah, I got that.
I got that one. Your screen could go black as if the TV is shutting off, which happens. Bugs might crawl on your screen, which I had happen. Yeah. Your screen may change the volume settings, which would work better back in 2002 because it looks like the CRT volume with the green volume, which would be great if I had a Sony Trinitron, but not if I have a HD TV. Your screen might go black and it says video in the corner.
Yeah.
Like the green video, like back in the day with the CRTs. After completing a level, which I got, but you didn't get, your game will congratulate you on completing the demo.
Which
was the best effect for me, because I was like freaking out. I was like, motherfucker, I bought this game off eBay and they just gave me the demo.
Did you get the blue screen of death?
I did not get the blue screen of death. That's another effect. When saving the game, it will ask you if you want to delete all your saves, which is another one, which I didn't get. The game will pretend to reset itself.
See, like, this sounds awesome.
That is definitely the best part of the game.
I feel like the whole game should have been played like that.
Yes.
The way you
problem with this game is that you have a meter that's your sanity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's down, you know that these effects are coming.
Yeah.
So there's no tension. There's no horror to it.
It's
just like and plus when you get, like, again, 3 or 4 hours in, you get spells where you'd never have to see these effects.
You can just heal your sanity.
Right. And the thing about magic, too, it costs mana to cast those spells. When you walk around, your magic refills.
Yeah.
Really?
There's
no cost to healing or, you know,
just time.
Magic. Right.
Would it have been a lot better if, like, perhaps you didn't have, like, a visible sanity meter?
Yes.
And just, like,
1,000%.
Like, if somebody, like, literally just modded this game to remove the sanity
meter. That's why
meter.
The best part for me when playing this game is when it said, thank you for playing the demo, because it was in between chapters. Usually the sanity effects happen when you enter a new room.
Mm-hmm.
It'll just happen, and then after a little bit, it'll fade away, and the guy will say, this can't be happening, and then it'll transition into the normal. But with that sanity effects, you completed a level, and then it just happened. Or sometimes it would happen in between segments, that's when it was like, oh, this is crazy. But there's, when you have a meter on the screen that shows that it's low, you're expecting these things to happen.
Sure,
so it's not like horror, it's just interesting at that point.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's other sanity effects that happen, like the walls bleed. Sometimes when you'll enter a room, the room will be upside down and you'll be walking on the ceiling and then it'll be transfer over.
This game too has like a fixed camera in all the rooms.
Okay. Yeah, like Resident Evil.
And so what'll happen is, like, as your sanity decreases, the camera will, like, tilt or like be off axis.
Yeah. Okay. It'll be, and it gets really annoying because if it's really low, it tilts so much that you're like turning your head. But yeah, so you mentioned that this game was very widely heralded at the time and critically acclaimed. But it sold 500,000 copies in Japan. It sold less than 18,000 copies. Silicon Knights, who made this game, Too Human failed. It was not what met well. They went bankrupt in 2013. So, and then Dennis Dyack, who was the director of this game, he wanted to crowdfund a sequel. He's tried twice and failed both times.
Like, he didn't even get the crowdfunding?
No.
Well, he should have sponsored this podcast.
Yeah. I think overall, his first time that he did it, his plan was really bad. So he wanted to do 12 four-hour episodes. Which,
That brings me to that reminds me that this game is way too long.
Yeah, it
drags on so.
The last three chapters are really long with the circles of power.
Yeah,
they become super tedious, and especially I told you because I went through it before you to get a guide. Yeah. If you don't know which symbols to put in, you have to go through that multiple times, and it gets super annoying.
And I don't think it even tells you until you get to the end and try and because you go through these like eight stages, and you have to like set a symbol.
Yeah. And then if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
Right, it doesn't work. You don't find out, though, until you've tried to, like, actually execute it.
Right.
Yeah.
So how long did it take you guys both to beat it?
The whole thing? Like
14 hours?
Is that right? Like 12? Yeah, 12, mm-hmm. Something like that. Yeah. So it's a solidly sized game, especially for the time period.
Yeah. Now, do you think if you guys had played it in 2002 with when you... Maybe it's a little bit hard to kind of put yourself back in the time, but you think about what you were playing in 2002. Do you think your view of this game would be a little bit different?
I think it's interesting you say that because I've been playing a lot of GameCube games recently. So we have a lot of episodes coming up soon with GameCube games. And all of the GameCube games...
I can't wait for Backyard Soccer.
those games are actually pretty decent.
My little brother had a bunch of them, so they're in my house now.
Those games, there's a lot more games that hold up really well.
I think the combat is what aged the worst. Like, I can see why this got good reviews or was well regarded because it's interesting.
You're a big Resident Evil fan, and you're.
I mean, the combat in Resident Evil is way more engaging, I think.
Yeah. Because there's that tension that like, you're going to die every second, but this game, it's like you just go hack.
I hate it.
No. Yeah. Well, and every room you're in here, you're fighting off four or five monsters, and it's like, you know, in Resident Evil. You'll encounter like a zombie that's in a hallway that you have to get by.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a little more interesting.
Yeah. And plus, in Resident Evil, there's be guys that just things happen where people pop out at you sometimes, or like guys will get up off the ground.
Yeah, they're not actually dead. Yeah, you've only got three bullets left.
You don't know what you do. You have to crawl around them.
There's the typewriter that you're gonna save is like three rooms away,
and you have limited saves in that game.
Yeah, in this you can save anywhere. Yeah, in any room
at any time. So. There's like not tension. That's for me why this game fails as a horror game is that there's the lack of tension in everything that you do.
But it's definitely an interesting game, especially in 2002.
I think that this game today it's less interesting because we're in a sea of games that are across every spectrum and every genre.
And people are being weird now, and they've been making weird games
for
the last 10 years or 20 years.
I don't even know. No.
Since 2010. Since this came out, there's been plenty of weird games to play.
There's been a lot more different games. People have been innovating a lot more because there's indie games. But this game at the time was just stood out as being very unique.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see where it would be.
This is probably one of the few games where you play as like a fat old man.
Yeah, it's for at some areas.
Like that's one of the things I really like about this game is that you just the character models are pretty varied across. Yeah.
And they all have characters. They have different attributes, so they have different health bars.
Yep.
And they have different speeds where you run.
And they'll eventually get, you know, obviously different like time appropriate like loadouts.
Right.
You know, like the guy will get like a musket revolver or whatever.
Or like a crossbow one person gets. Yeah. And then even the swords are different. So there you have the centurion sword, and you have like a medieval sword at some points.
I liked in this game too. What I also like in Resident Evil is it's a lot of like you have an inventory and you go up to something and you have to like know that okay, I have this object in my inventory that I have to go use.
Right. Mm-hmm. I would say that the puzzles here are very easy too.
Yeah, it's they're certainly like, easy.
Yeah, it's much easier than a Resident Evil game.
Like for instance, when you're Indiana Jones, you get like an archaeologist brush.
Yeah.
And you're just like brushing away different cobwebs and stuff, and you find items.
Yeah.
But I mean that's different, you know, like
it's fairly like it's not as interesting as a Resident Evil game, for example.
I mean, we keep saying Resident Evil, but I'm sure by this time the Silent Hill series was probably already started. Fatal Frame was probably there was probably a bunch of survival horror games.
Yeah, but this is like the way this game is framed and the way it presents Fatal itself. Frame? No, Eternal Darkness, like how you're going to a mansion and how there's a fixed camera and how you're dealing with guys that are stumbling around just evokes Resident Evil.
Gotcha.
So that's why we keep making that thing. But we should talk about where this goes in our rankings, our endless list. So right now, our endless list goes from number one Super Mario 64 to number 48 Jurassic Park Trespasser. We have 48 games. This will be our 49th game on our endless list. We have Resident Evil on our list as number 5. But I think this game is going to go a lot lower than this game, than Resident Evil.
Oh, well, I didn't play it, so I have no input.
But for example, like the first thing that I thought of, I will say one good thing about this game is, like, we played God of War within the past year, earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
This game looks better than God of War. And it came out, I believe, 3 years before God of War. I think that graphically, for the time period, it looks pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I think from a technical perspective, God of War is like much faster and has a smoother frame rate. It's got a much more going on.
It's got a better storyline.
Yeah.
It's got
just visually,
better combat. It's a much better game. I would not.
But it does look very God of War. You're right.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, the
comparison seems, relevant.
And I think also the camera perspective that they use is pretty much kind of the same as God of War.
Yeah.
Like how it's fixed but kind of moving at the same time.
And I generally really like that. Or like games that have that.
I could take it or leave it.
Because it's a little superficial. But
yeah. I liked Spider-Man 2 a little bit more than this game.
All right, so you want to go from Spider-Man 2 down?
I would say so.
All right.
What's your range? Where do you want to go?
So Spider-Man 2
is number 29.
Is 29 out of 48.
Yep.
I like it more than Zone of the Enders.
Yes, it's a more interesting game than Zone of the Enders. I would say it's a more complete game than a game like Night Trap, and more interesting game than a game like Night Trap.
Why don't we walk up from
Zone of the Enders? So Night Trap is 38.
Yeah,
those listening.
We should walk up, the ranks rather than try to just place it. So you want to start at Zone of the Enders and go up?
Yes. Okay. We'll start there. Okay.
So Paperboy at 41. Like, I mean, is Paperboy a worse game than this? It's certainly less complex.
Yeah, it's certainly less complex. It's less interesting.
I think I had more fun with 12 hours of this
than 12 hours of Paperboy. I agree.
Do you need 12 hours to beat Paperboy? Shitty gamer are you?
I would say that this game is better than and more complete game than Deja Vu.
Oh, really?
Yeah, even for the time period.
Let's roll with that.
I don't think this game, it may be as influential as pro wrestling, but it's definitely a more solid experience than pro wrestling. And if we're using the benchmark of, do you want to play this game for 12 hours versus pro wrestling, I think that this game goes higher than pro wrestling.
Definitely.
But you don't need to play pro wrestling for 12 hours.
In order to get the enjoyment? The same enjoyment? No, I think that this game is more enjoyable than pro wrestling. It's also a more complete package.
So Night Trap.
Night Trap is not a fun necessarily game to play. This game, and a not necessarily a fun experience to have. It's more like it's super influential on the industry, and it's interesting.
It's, yeah. Night Trap, I think, is super interesting.
Yeah. But I think this game is a more complete experience as a game, and I think it should go higher than Night Trap.
I agree. However, I start to question if it can go above 37.
Pokemon Snap?
Pokemon Snap.
I would say Pokemon Snap is a fun game. Mm-hmm. Very tedious, though.
Mike is like one by one working this into like the top 15.
I'm not gonna go much higher. I just think I don't think like it. You play the same levels in Pokemon Snap over and over again. Right. There's no story.
You play the same levels in this, and I mean,
yeah, you do. But there, at least it's more interesting and more compelling.
Though? I don't know. I think in Pokemon Snap, you at least get, you know, different items that allow you to find different Pokemon, you know, like...
Yeah, but what's the story in Pokemon Snap?
I mean, I don't think, you know, what's the story
What's
the story in Tapper?
What's the main character's name in Pokemon
You're
Snap?
You're a struggling businessman.
His name is Snap.
Oh, is it Snap?
Yes.
That's better than what I've come
up with. Well, it doesn't sound like that's clearly stated. So.
I just think from a completeness of vision, I always go back to this, but this has a more complete vision, and it also was like way more interesting as a game than Pokemon Snap.
Interesting? I mean, I can see your perspective. I do think, though, a game where you're taking photographs and luring out Pokemon... and you're getting graded, you know, like on a semi-artistic scale. Like, I think
let
me interject really quick. Let's put the Pokemon Snap argument aside. Is this going to go beyond Super Hang-On?
I would put this...
Pokemon Snap doesn't exist. Super Hang-On is the next one.
I would put this directly above Super Hang-On.
So it's okay, worse than
Tapper. That's where we're at. We're at somewhere. It's not better than Tapper.
You don't think it's better than Tapper?
No.
At 35? Why?
I have too much enjoyment playing Tapper.
I've noticed it seems like a recurring theme in these episodes where it's like, yes, Tapper is relatively low on the list, but like games hit a brick wall with you.
I don't know about that.
But like, they just can't. Tapper is like some weird divider you have put in like the bottom quadrant of this list.
I think if we're
not denying it.
Nope.
Yeah, no, I think that's completely accurate.
It's always, well, you can fill beer mugs.
What, yeah. do you, so you want to put it above Tapper?
I mean, no, I don't care.
I think we should keep going.
I just think it's just the Tapper wall.
Yeah. When I first looked at this, like, honestly, after I completed this game, I thought that this game was going to go somewhere in the range of between Tapper and God of War. That's what I thought, because I was never going to put it above God of War. Range. But at the same time, like, I did not think that this game was, I thought this game was a more compelling experience than a Super Hang-On. I think it's a more compelling experience than Tapper, where for me, it's difficult is because Phantasmagoria is a very, like, it takes Night Trap and it like adds these characters who are filmed and puts it into a point and click adventure game where there's a complete story and there's a nice point-and-click action-adventure game within this combined with FMV. And so it's, like, super interesting. It happens in 1994, I believe, is when that game came out.
So it's, like, a more complex Night Trap.
Yeah, but it's a point-and-click adventure. Right. It's not like you're pressing a button whenever...
Yeah, it's an evolved version.
Yes, and the acting's terrible. Well, the story is not... This story is... better than Eternal Darkness. It is less confusing, but it's still bad.
I just don't know how you can honestly say that Tapper ranks above this critically acclaimed.
So you want to? So you'd like to put this between Tapper and Phantasmagoria?
I think it can't live below Tapper.
Okay.
I mean, the way you guys have been talking about it, I didn't think it was.
I mean, it's bad. Deja vu. It's bad, but. I like Tapper. I enjoy Tapper. I just think that you're overvaluing, you know, a simple but good arcade game.
Well, maybe we should address that at our next annual.
Yeah, I think we might need to.
Yeah,
listen, I want to buy you the waters, but I'll just say with pro wrestling for the NES, that is very early pro wrestling game where the referee's position actually impacts your ability to score pinfall against your opponent.
You can interact.
Now, I think that is referee.
You cannot.
That is very, I think, you know, that's a game that advanced. Was really much looking down the road to a referee being out of position and impacting competitive contests, and I didn't get any of that. Sort of forward thinking from your discussion about Eternal Darkness.
I do think they took, so this game, I like just thinking about this game, came out in 2002, and I think they saw the Psycho Mantis fight from Metal Gear Solid. Honest to God, I think they saw the Metal Gear Solid fight and they made a complete game out of it. Because there is a lot that is directly in the Sanity effects from that fight.
And
they also went on to make the Twin the
video
Snakes.
Thing, the video thing in particular.
Yes.
Let's not give them too much credit.
But they also there's also like the they make bus into the characters is one of the sanity effects. So when you enter a room and there if there's bus and your sanity is low, you will turn into that bust.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So there's like things like that happen in Metal Gear Solid.
I don't mean to backtrack here.
But there's a lot because a year later they made the Twin Snakes. So I really think there's some cross-pollination between the ideas they picked up in that fight and this game.
This has to be the longest debate this podcast has ever had.
Yeah, I don't know.
Where a game should
I'm actually falling back to, don't think this is better than Pokemon Snap.
Here's the deal. let's take an average of where we think this could be. So I think that this goes above Tapper. You think that this goes below Pokemon Snap.
Yeah.
Is the average of this in between Super Hang-On and Pokemon Snap?
Yeah, I think so, because I also think Super Hang-On is a better game.
Okay, we can do.
I think Super Hang-On is actually a really interesting take on the racing, or that early racing genre with the mechanic.
It's way better than stuff that was on the NES, and it was around the same time period. Yeah. I agree. So let's put it in between Super Hang-On and Pokemon Snap.
Because I think that's fair. I think as long as it's next to Pokemon Snap, because they, for whatever reason in my mind, are very similar in that they're both weird. But have not aged well.
Yes, I agree.
But we're both they were both critically acclaimed too. Everyone loved Pokemon Snap.
It's true. So let's have our Eternal Darkness as our new number 37 game on our endless list is Eternal Darkness. Not quite as good as Super Hang-On, or I would say influential on its genre, because Super Hang-On was super influential on the racing genre. So,
but it's a little bit better than Pokemon Snap.
A little bit better than Pokemon Snap.
So how many games is that now on the list?
That's 49.
49.
49.
Whoa, I wonder if 50 is going to be a big one.
So I did promise that this month we're going to have a whole bunch of haunted, spooky games. But then this game is our second one. So we did Phantasmagoria and we did Eternal Darkness, which is this week. Next week is going to be our 50th game, which we're going to add a special game.
Do you want to tease it?
Yes, we're going to
Do you want to reveal it?
We're going to add a game by Hideo Kojima. The second game.
Zone of the Enders 2. Was he involved with that?
He was. No, we are adding the first Metal Gear Solid to our endless list next week. So tune in, and you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, etc. You can also find this complete endless list on our Medium page. It's linked in the podcast description. Follow us on Twitter. It's at itsobadpod. On Twitter, and you can also email us itsobadpod@gmail.com. We take your questions, comments, concerns, and we also take your view of our rankings into account. If you will ever email us, itsobadpod@gmail.com. And thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Matt, and thank you, Chris, for joining us.
Hey, anytime.
Perfect. Thanks, guys.